WWE Crown Jewel 2023 is in the books. Here it is Saturday, November 4th, 2023. I am the Solemn Monster. And still, your undisputed WWE Universal Champion, to the surprise of absolutely no one, is Roman Reigns. We had the usual bloodline bullshit at the end of our main event here tonight. We had Jimmy Uso getting involved. We had Solo Sikoa trying to get involved. LA Knight, he put up a valiant effort. He put up a fight. And in the end, he took the same spear and the same pinfall that so many before him have taken. There's no shame in it, right? We've seen the same thing happen to Drew McIntyre. We've seen the same thing happen to Sami Zayn and Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso and countless other people over the last 3.5 years. What I think was quite suspect, though, was having 4 straight matches closing out this show, all with interference. Distractions, interference, at least break it up a little bit, right? I understand them wanting to use Cody and Damian Priest as the buffer match there towards the end. I get that. So yeah, 4 straight matches with interference to close out this show I thought was a bit much. But I look, there's going to be people who were upset that LA Knight did not go over. You should not be, because at no point was LA Knight realistically going to be the one to take the championship from Roman Reigns. After 3.5 years, we're coming into Royal Rumble and WrestleMania season. The worst thing they could have done was do some kind of a dusty finish. I had people telling me maybe they can switch the title, but then it turns out he didn't actually really win the belt and they could put it back on Roman Reigns. That would have been the worst thing that you could do. So the outcome was really not a surprise, but watching the same bloodline interference month after month, PLE after PLE, it gets exhausting. It's old. And this is what people want for another year. There are people who want Roman Reigns in some cases. I don't know how many people fall into this category. I sure as shit am not one of them. But people who want Roman to reign on for another year and beat Hogan and surpass Hogan on the list. By the way, whatever happened to Bob Backlund? We had Michael Cole on the show tonight saying that Roman Reigns has 2 more people to pass on the list of longest reigning champions in WWE history. No mention of Bob Backlund. It's like the man doesn't even exist. They mentioned Bruno Sammartino. They mentioned Hulk Hogan. And this is a company that has mentioned Bob Backlund before when they talk about Roman and all the people that he is passing on the way up the ladder. All of a sudden, it's like Bob Backlund, he just vanished off the face of the earth. They erased him from history. He's been Benoit from WWE. I don't understand that. But yes, Roman Reigns is still the champion. And LA Knight, I thought, went in there. And you know, here's the other thing about LA Knight. And I'm already getting messages about this. From tweets and people in the chat I saw were talking about this. Oh, you know, LA Knight, he can't really do much in the ring. LA Knight is incapable of having a long match. Now, I didn't put a clock on that main event. I don't know if it went a full 20 minutes or not. It felt like it did. If not, it was in that range. Since when is that not long? How long do you want these matches to go? What is he, fucking Okada? You expect Roman to be out there for 45 minutes every pay-per-view? I thought that they had a fine match. The match itself, up until all the bullshit at the finish, I thought was fine. I thought LA Knight had the match of his life on this show. LA Knight was fine. He had the crowd behind him. He was getting that superstar level reaction. This was his first main event, true main event in WWE. And the fans in Saudi Arabia were behind him, no different than they are here in the States. So it's real. The LA Knight push is real. The people, the support behind him is real. And I still have people who aren't convinced of this. And they're like, oh, you know, it's just one of those things. You know, people will be over him in a month or two, right? They said that at the beginning of the fucking year. He's been getting reactions like this all year long. The challenge now is that he has gone to the main event and he has lost. He went in there and made promises and said that I'm going to beat you. I'm going to become the WWE champion. And he didn't. And so now, how do the fans react to this? Do the fans sort of abandon ship on LA Knight and say, okay, you know, the guy, he was full of hot air? Or do they stick with him the way that they have stuck with Cody Rhodes? Because I had these same concerns about Cody coming out of WrestleMania. A lot of people were saying that, oh, Cody is done. Cody is dead. And I think it's been proven already that Cody Rhodes is far from dead. Cody Rhodes has been just fine. And now we have to hope, if you're an LA Knight fan, that LA Knight will be just fine. But the key now is in the follow-up, because what they did here in this match certainly sets up a reason for LA Knight to want to get a piece of the bloodline in a War Games match. And we got the official announcement on this show that War Games is coming back. We no longer have to rely on websites and rumors. War Games is coming back at Survivor Series, and I assume that means for the men and the women. They didn't specify, but I can't imagine they have one without the other. So we know we're getting a War Games match. Now, Roman Reigns really needs to be part of that War Games match, because if you look at the babyface side of what that team is likely going to look like, you're looking at people like Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso and Sami Zayn and LA Knight. These are all people that have had beef with Roman Reigns and the bloodline. These are all people that have wrestled Roman Reigns and have been screwed over by him and the bloodline. How is he not going to be a part of a War Games match? He was last year. And I know all these reports now, and you had different people saying that Roman isn't even scheduled to wrestle again for the rest of the year. That's it. This was it. He's got the rest of the year off. We'll see you at the Royal Rumble. He needs to be at Survivor Series. He needs to be in Chicago. He needs to be part of that War Games match. It's the only thing that makes sense. Show up to work and be part of the War Games. They set things in motion tonight as far as that goes. But that wasn't the only thing that happened on this show. We did have a few other noteworthy things to talk about, which includes a new United States champion crown. This actually kind of ties in with Roman Reigns, and I'll tell you why here in a second, but we have a new U.S. champion. His name is Logan Paul. And if you were wondering, one of the many reasons why WWE wanted to put the U.S. title on Logan Paul, if you go over to TMZ.com right now, it is the lead story on TMZ that Logan Paul is the new United States champion. And that is one of the reasons why they love the idea of that belt being on someone like Logan Paul. But now we look ahead and I say to myself, Logan Paul is on SmackDown. Roman Reigns is on SmackDown. What do the two of them have in common? They're part-time. Roman Reigns shows up once every few months at this point. Logan Paul shows up for a few weeks at a time, disappears for a few months. So now at this moment, we have two absentee champions on the same show. They're both on SmackDown. You know, when you had Roman disappearing for months at a time, they had to create this other World Heavyweight Championship. The only reason Seth Rollins has a belt at this point is because Roman Reigns has it built into his contract that he gets X number of days off per year. And good for him getting that deal. But now on SmackDown, you have Roman Reigns, world champion, right? How often is he really going to be showing up? Not very often. Logan Paul, I sure hope that they have an agreement with him for him to at least be semi-regular on television. Otherwise, we now have two champions who are barely going to be showing up on the show. What is there for people to fight for? You take all the titles away. What the hell else is there to fight for? So I hope they have that all worked out, and I hope we'll see more of Logan on TV. He doesn't have to be wrestling every week on TV, but he at least needs to be present on the fucking show. Because right now, at this moment, that's what you have. You have two absentee champions on the same brand. Seth Rollins, though, is the world champion on Raw. He defended his title against Drew McIntyre on this show. This is one of the matches I was most looking forward to coming into this show. And I very much enjoyed their match. In fact, I think they had the match of the night. That was the opening match on the show, and I think they had the best match of the entire show. That story with McIntyre will continue. John Cena was on the show, one-on-one with Solo Sikoa. Would they go with the feel-good story? Would he put over the Young Buck? I'm not talking about Matt or Nick. Would he put Solo over in the match? Because Solo is the one that's being groomed, right, for bigger things, obviously, in this bloodline story. Well, they went with the latter. And John Cena, who came into this show lacking a win in a singles match, 5 years have gone by since he last got a win. It was in Saudi Arabia against Triple H, the very first Saudi show. That streak continues because John Cena lost to Solo Sikoa, but he lost in very decisive fashion. So when I talk about there being four straight matches on the show with interference and bullshit, this was not one of those situations. This was straight up one-on-one, and John Cena lost. There's no question about, oh, you know, Solo had Jimmy Uso come out or Roman Reigns come out or Paul Heyman come out to help him. There was none of that. Even at WrestleMania, when John Cena lost to Austin Theory, right, there was some hijinks there on the part of Theory in that match. Nothing like that here. This was a decisive win for Solo Sikoa, and that's a big deal for him. You know, whatever value Cena has left at this point, because again, he hasn't won a fucking match in 5 years, but whatever value he still has left in these situations, he put it all out there for Solo. He was very giving of himself in this match with Solo Sikoa, which was encouraging to see. So we're going to talk about all of this. Overall, I thought this was one of the weaker pay-per-views of the entire year. They've had some very, very strong shows. They've had a string of very strong Saudi Arabia shows. This was not one of the better ones that they've had over the past year. I thought this was a much weaker show than we have gotten. The in-ring work was good. The opening match was the best match. The main event, I thought, was very good. In between, I thought the work in the ring was solid. But just on the whole, it just felt very flat in a lot of parts. It was very predictable. Yeah, just because it is predictable doesn't make it bad, but when it's a little too predictable, I think that does take away from the show a little bit. So I think this ranked at the lower end of the recent Saudi shows they've done. But overall, I mean, if I had to give it a number ranking, if we're doing the 1 to 10 scale here, I mean, I would probably go 6 or 6.5 on this show. I think that's fair. I wouldn't go higher than that. We'll talk about it. This is your Crown Jewel 2023 review, and that's not even everything. There was something else that happened on the show. There was a big return, or maybe not a big return. If you listen to the crowd, it wasn't very big at all. We'll talk about Crown Jewel here. I am the Solid Monster. Like and subscribe. We're looking, I think, what is the goal? 450, right? 450 likes is the goal for Be the Booker later. Super chats are open. I want to give a shout out to Fawaz, a loyal listener of the show who was at the show in Riyadh. And Fawaz is the one who always brings a sign to the shows to represent the sound. I mean, he is always representing the podcast. He's always front and center, always on the hard cam. The effort that he puts into that is just off the charts. But they took his sign away from him coming into the building. They apparently didn't let anybody into the building with signs. You didn't see any of them, except the ones WWE gave out for LA Knight. You saw those. But they didn't let him into the building with the sign. I know we felt bad about that, but I appreciate the thought. And I just want to give him a shout out, not to worry. Very much appreciate all of your support for Waz. So, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Sami Zayn and JD McDonagh was the kickoff match on this show. They had Byron Saxton, by the way, doing the ring announcing for the entire show. Samantha Irvin is handling the ring announce duties in the U.S., so they did not send her over there. So Byron, and I thought Byron did a fine job. You know, I want to say he's filled in a few times on ring announcing over the years. He doesn't do it very often, but I thought he was fine in the role. Zayn and McDonagh, they came into this match all knotted up at one win apiece. So this was the rubber match between the two of them. Zayn went for a monkey flip early, and McDonagh, he took the move awkwardly. It looked like he kind of hesitated. He stalled there for a split second instead of just going for the motion. And so he didn't get the momentum that he was looking to get. And he just landed in a very awkward way, you know, almost kind of on his head. So he was okay. Although he did bust up his elbow. He got banged up a bit during this match because at one point I noticed his elbow was all busted up. And he had a really big bruise on the side of his rib cage. And I don't know, maybe it was mat burn, I don't know, but it looked like a giant bruise. I didn't see where it happened or you know, where it came from, but he got beaten up a little bit here in this match. So I love the finish here. We'll get to that. Sammy teased the Blue Thunder Bomb. McDonagh bailed to the apron, and he was able to cut Sammy off. And so McDonagh went for a superplex a little bit later on. Sammy fought him off. And McDonough connected with a drop kick as Zayn was coming off the ropes. So Sammy came back with a big lariat. And McDonough headed up top. He tried for a moonsault, and Zayn got his feet up. Boots to the face. He caught him on the way down. Zayn then connected with an exploder into the corner, and then he connected with the Huluva kick, which he used as a setup to the Blue Thunder Bomb, and he got the pin off of the Blue Thunder Bomb. I love that. I love that finish. And I hope that sequence is not something that was one and done. I would like to see him do that from now on in his matches. I love the Blue Thunder Bomb. I love just the visual. Even when Takeshita uses it in AEW, you get some spin on that. Just visually, it looks great. So I would like to see him use that sequence more often. Use the Huluva kick as the setup, and then go with the Blue Thunder Bomb for the finish. You got a winning combo right there. The match itself was okay. Nothing special, but I love that finishing sequence. So that was the only match on the kickoff show. That took us into Crown Jewel proper. And they opened up the main card with Seth Rollins defending the World Heavyweight Championship against Drew McIntyre. It was on the last Saudi show back in May that Seth beat AJ Styles in the finals of a tournament to crown a brand new World Heavyweight Champion. So Seth has been the champion since then. And he's had some very good matches during that time. None as good as the one that he had here on this show. So the champion entered first, which was very strange, and I thought, well, maybe Drew is coming out to Broken Dreams again. Maybe he's bringing back Broken Dreams. There were Broken Dreams at the end of this match for him, but there were no Broken Dreams here on the PA system. He came out normal entrance, so I'm not really sure why they did it that way, why they had the champion come out first. I'm not 100% sure. Michael Cole noted that Rhea Ripley sent out a tweet wishing both men good luck. Stirring the pot going into the show, right? Because she tried to recruit Seth. She tried to recruit McIntyre. That was the story coming into this show. Would one of them use the Judgment Day's help in beating the other? The answer was no. Neither one of them did. McIntyre put Rollins down with an early spine buster. And then a little while later, Rollins came back. He had a superplex. Stood McIntyre up for the Falcon Arrow that he usually follows through with. But McIntyre countered into a suplex of his own. Rollins came back. He had McIntyre up for a buckle bomb, and his back gave out, right? The bad back that he's been nursing now for months. The second longest storyline in WWE. Well, third. Third longest storyline in WWE. The first one is the bloodline. The second one is Cody's story. And the third is the bad back with Seth Rollins. So it gave out on him. McIntyre put him down with a Future Shock DDT for a near fall. McIntyre went to the corner, and he was setting up for a Claymore kick. Rollins, though, stayed down. He was still selling the back. And the referee went to go check on Rollins. McIntyre went to go walk over to him, and Rollins hooked him into an inside cradle for a two count. And we even got a Bret Hart reference on commentary at that point from Wade Barrett. He mentioned Bret the Hitman Hart. And I'm so happy he did, because I had the exact same thought. Great minds think alike. That reminded me of Survivor Series 95, right? Playing possum, trying to hook him in for the win. It worked at Survivor Series. It did not work here. Rollins sent McIntyre outside, hit him with a suicide dive. Rollins came up selling his lower back, and Drew recovered. He drove Rollins back first into the ring steps. McIntyre stood on the steps, picked up Seth at his side, and he dropped him on the ring apron with a side slam. Back inside, looked like McIntyre was hesitating a little bit, maybe showing some mercy. And he started talking some smack to Seth. Seth slapped him across the face. Rollins, he rallied. He got a pedigree and a near fall. The announcers were playing up the idea that McIntyre showed sympathy to him, and he needed to be more aggressive if he wanted to win the championship. So Rollins went for a stomp. McIntyre caught him and drove him into the corner. And then he hit consecutive suplexes and a neck breaker. Drew kipped up, and he counted down for the Claymore kick. And the crowd chanted along with him. The crowd wanted to see a title change here. The crowd reaction was very interesting. It's not that they were booing Seth Rollins, although at moments it may have sounded like he got more boos than cheers. I think it was just they wanted to see a title change here. Because whenever Drew went on offense, the people were really up for him and really behind him. And there were moments where With Rollins, that was not, noticeably not the case. So McIntyre kipped up. He went for the Claymore kick. Rollins caught him coming in with a super kick. He followed that up with a curb stomp. And McIntyre kicked out at 2.9. So that was a good near fall there. Not the best, though. There would be a better one coming up here in a few minutes. Rollins went up top. He rolled through on the Phoenix Splash. It's a case in point. This is the near fall I was talking about. He went for a Phoenix Splash, and he rolled through because Drew moved out of the way. And when Rollins stood back up, McIntyre blasted him with a Claymore kick, and he went for the pin, and they got me with that near fall. They got me. That was a tremendous near fall because I thought that was the end right there. And honestly, that would have been a great finish if they wanted to go with that as the finish and crown a new champion there. But that's how you do a near fall. So Rollins kicked out. McIntyre now is desperate. He's setting up for another Claymore. Rollins catches him with a super kick. McIntyre tried one more time. Rollins ducked it. He put McIntyre down with a pedigree, followed up with a curb stomp, and finally picked up the three to retain the World Heavyweight Championship. McIntyre left the ring. Obviously, he was in no mood. So he left the ring. The announcers questioned what's next for Drew McIntyre. Rollins is in the ring, right? He's licking his wounds and trying to recover. And we hear Damian Priest's music. And he runs out. He's got the Money in the Bank briefcase. He's got a referee with him. He runs down to the ring. He hands the briefcase to the referee. And he's saying, I want to cash in on Seth Rollins here. And the crowd's like, oh, shit, we're going to get a cash in. And then all of a sudden, a hooded figure dressed in all black attacks Damian Priest from behind. And he runs Priest into the ring post, and he removes the hood, and it's CM Punk. I'm kidding. you got people watching this stream who did not see the show, and they're like doing other shit. They're fucking, you know, they got their feather duster, and they're dusting their room, and they go, CM Punk, what? No. Although that would have been very interesting. But he pulls the hood down, and it's Sami Zayn. And the crowd popped, because again, they love Sami Zayn. He grabs the briefcase. And he steals it, and he runs off through the crowd with it. And everybody cheers. So let's talk about the match first, though. Excellent match. Really enjoyed this match. Four stars plus, whatever rating you want to give it. I would even go four and a quarter. I mean, it was an excellent match. Better than the matches that Rollins had with Finn Balor, which is why I think it might probably be the best match that he's had during this entire run. And the matches with Balor were largely good. Yeah, they were largely very good. The kicking out of all the finishers, I know that's going to be a turnoff for a lot of people. And it would be for me in certain situations. You know, for me, it's not just a black and white thing. There are matches that I will watch in WWE or NXT back in the black and gold days or AEW today, where it just gets to a point where I kind of throw my hands up in the air and I'm like, you know what? This is ridiculous. This is one too many. And then there are other matches where it's finisher spam and there's kicking out of finishers, but they make it work, right? Case in point, Undertaker and Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania. This situation here, they didn't overdo it, I don't think. I thought it was fine. If this would have gone on another 5 minutes of that, I would have said, okay, they've taken this a little too far, but it didn't really bother me. And it's the outcome that had to happen. Now, for the people who may be upset or they're sick of Seth Rollins, they're ready for, you know, a new champion to be crowned. For me, it had to happen this way because Drew McIntyre is going heel. They're telling a story. I mean, it's like a glacier moving in the ocean, but they're taking their time. They're telling this story with Drew McIntyre. This is what is going to push him to the brink. He needed to lose this match to get to where he is going to be. McIntyre may yet end up winning the championship. Just because he didn't win on this show doesn't mean he won't go on to win, but it had to happen this way for the sake of his story. This is how it had to go down. Now, backstage, they showed him. He was sitting down. He was sulking after his loss. And then the camera pans out and we see Rhea Ripley, who was coming out next for her match. She just looks at Drew. She doesn't say anything. And she just sort of shrugs her shoulders as if to say, told you so. You could have called on me for help. Oh, well. and she walked off. So again, it feeds into his story. And the Drew McIntyre character, this whole character arc that he has been on, honestly, has been the most interesting thing on Raw since SummerSlam. So I'm happy they're continuing that. Sammy stealing the briefcase goes to what he said on Raw Monday night when he said he will fight. He will do everything in his power to make sure that the Judgment Day does not rule all the championships in the company and on Monday Night Raw. They will not hold all the power so long as he has breath in his body, right? That's what Sami Zayn said. Now, there was one more interesting thing, and he knows how to get people talking. After Seth won the match, WWE on their Twitter posted an image that said, "And still," and it showed Seth Rollins holding the World Heavyweight Championship. But Will Ospreay saw this, and Will Ospreay quote tweeted it with a pair of eyes. He used the eyeball emoji. He's watching. Right, he sees Seth with that champion. He knows what he's doing. He's not a stupid man. Will Ospreay is going to make a lot of money very soon. It's just a question of, is it WWE? Is it billionaire money from WWE and Endeavor, or is it billionaire money from the Khan family? That's really the only question left at this point. But if he were to come to WWE, I mean, that's match number one that you got to set up for Will Ospreay. Right, the two have gone back and forth on social media before, Ospreay and Rollins for the World Heavyweight title. Shit, sign me up for that. We had a fatal five-way for the Women's World Championship with Rhea Ripley defending against Nia Jax, Raquel Rodriguez, Zoe Stark, and Shayna Baszler. Let me just also take a moment here to welcome everybody who is with me here live on a rare late afternoon here on Saturday on YouTube. The likes goal for our Be the Booker segment is 450. We're already over 330, so we're getting close. We're getting close. So I need you to help get me there. So hit that thumbs up if you haven't already. Rhea got the special entrance, as she should, because she is the champion. And what they did for her entrance is they had about, I don't know, maybe like a dozen men come out on stage. They played this kind of creepy sound and music in the background. And they lined up evenly on either side of her as she made her way out. She was dressed in all black from head to toe because, you know, in Saudi you have to be. The makeup that she was wearing, she reminded me of Jack Nicholson in Batman. She looked like the Joker. You can put any makeup on her face, she's always going to look good. But that's what she reminded me of coming out here. So Nia Jax came to the ring. And the bell rang, because initially she wouldn't get in the ring. Finally, she gets in the ring. And all the other women are going for early pin attempts here. I mean, this is the format of these types of matches, right? Everyone's going for a pin every 5 seconds. Baszler put Ripley and Rodriguez, I'm just going to skip to the highlights of this, because honestly, I mean, 75% of the match was, you know, trying to get a pin, somebody comes over and breaks it up. Riveting stuff. Baszler put Ripley and Raquel in simultaneous leg locks, and when Nia came over and tried to intervene, Shayna put her in the Kirifuda clutch. So she had a three-way submission going on at the same time, which was kind of unique. But this went on forever. I was waiting for Nia to go out. I'm like, does she have that thing cinched in tight enough? Because she was waiting and waiting and waiting, and she was waiting for Zoe Stark to come over and break it up. I think Zoe may have taken too long. Because this went on, I think, a little too long. You got Raquel on the mat. You got Rhea on the mat. They're flailing away, right? Because what are they supposed to do? They're supposed to wait for the spot to be broken up. So finally, it was broken up. Ripley and Rodriguez, they set Zoe up for a double superplex. Baszler slipped underneath them and turned it into the usual Tower of Doom spot that we get in these matches. Ripley and Raquel, they pushed and shoved each other, and then they traded slaps. They followed that up with simultaneous big boots, and so they both went down. Ripley and Rodriguez, they stood up. They started yelling at each other on the apron. Zoe Stark comes over, knocks both of them to the floor. Zoe then hits a top rope dive onto both women. Back in the ring, Zoe hits her Z360 finish to Rhea Ripley, goes for the pin. That gets broken up by Nia Jax. Nia then set up Zoe for the bonsai drop, but Raquel comes over. And they build Raquel up as, you know, she's this big powerhouse, right? She comes out and she's got the muscle. I mean, not like me, but you know, she's got the muscles and everything, right? She's a powerhouse. So I'm like, all right, this is going to be an impressive spot here because she's setting up for the Tejana Bomb, which is her finish to Nia Jax. Because Nia's already on the ropes, right? Setting up for the Banzai Splash. So she gets her in position for the Tejana Bomb and she's trying to hold her up there. And you can tell she's having a tremendous amount of difficulty in doing this. Nia is still holding on to the top rope. And now Raquel is ready to attempt the move. As soon as Nia let go of that rope, I mean, it wasn't even a case where she kind of walked with her for like 2 seconds. She just dropped her. That was it. Not powerful enough, apparently, to hoist up Nia Jax. So down goes Nia. And Raquel went for the pin. It got broken up. Rhea hit Riptide on Shayna, had her pinned, but Zoe broke that up. And Zoe sat Ripley on the top rope, and she went to the middle rope. Meanwhile, down below, Raquel covers Shayna. On the ropes, Ripley counters whatever Shayna was setting up for into Riptide. And she hits Riptide off the middle rope, down across Raquel's back, which breaks up that pin. And then Rhea covers Shayna, and she pins her to retain the Women's World Championship. So the finish was kind of cool. The match itself I thought was okay. I didn't really much care for it. Zoe, they actually put some shine on Zoe here. I thought Zoe was going to eat the pin at the end of this, and I was kind of surprised that she didn't. Happy, you know, but surprised they had Shayna get pinned instead. So, I mean, it was fine. But this was not my favorite match of the show. But Rhea retaining was never in doubt. And so this is one of the more predictable matches on this show. Did anybody honestly believe coming into this, as featured as she is on Raw every single week, that Rhea Ripley was actually going to lose her title? They wanted you to believe that because she didn't have to be pinned in a five-way to take the fall. And there's always in the back of your mind, like, holy shit, is Triple H going to put this belt on Nia Jax? I would like to think I have enough faith in Triple H that he wouldn't do that. And thankfully, he did not. So the right person won, but the match was over. Now we get to John Cena. Poor John Cena. Y'all got to feel so bad for John Cena. This guy, he's fallen on tough times here. I know that he's made more money than God over these many years just from his t-shirts, right? This guy. How much money has John Cena made from the t-shirts that he has sold over the years, right? Let alone whatever WWE was paying him for a salary. And now he's in Hollywood and he's making big movies and he's doing car commercials and he's hosting Wipeout. He's doing all sorts of stuff. But you got to feel bad for John Cena because this poor fucker has not won a match, a singles match, in 5 years. And he came out on television last week and he said, you know, feel like I'm in jeopardy of losing the respect and the love of all you people. Basically because he's a loser. And then he got Samoan spiked on television last week. He came out on SmackDown last night sounding like a chain smoker. Talking like this, right? That was John Cena last night. But it was John Cena against Solo Sikoa. And Cena was trying to win his first match since 2018, his first singles match. So he targeted. Now, before I even get into this, what did I tell you? I told you this a few weeks ago, and I told you this when I did the predictions on the podcast. I can visualize it in my brain. John Cena is going to come in, he's going to start hot, and then he's going to sell for the majority of the match. That's exactly what happened here. John Cena came out, he targeted the hand that Solo uses for the Samoan spike with the thumb wrapped. They fought out onto the floor where Cena slammed the hand onto the ring steps. Back inside, Solo caught Cena with a headbutt, and then he put the boots to him. And at that point, this turned into what I said, which was John Cena selling. Because he's 45 years old. He's not wrestling full-time anymore. He hasn't in many years. And he has to protect his body. He can't afford to go in there and do too much and get hurt. Now, you could get hurt doing a hip toss. That's how he tore his pec when he was in the ring with Ken Kennedy back in 2007, I think it was. So you can get hurt doing anything. You can do a leapfrog and blow your Achilles, but he's not going to do too much. He would rather just sell and sell and sell and make a comeback at the end because he's got to go back soon. Once the strike is over, John Cena, he's got movies and TV shows he's got to make. So you're going to get what you're going to get from him here. Easier for him to just sell. And so that's what they did. Cena caught Solo in the STF, though. Solo broke it by rolling Cena into a pin. When Cena stood up, Solo put him right back down with a clothesline. And then he put Cena in a tree of woe. Cena tried to pull himself up, but he couldn't. And Solo ran across the ring and he delivered a headbutt. Then he went for the Samoan spike. And Cena ducked the spike. Many times, actually. This was the first time. But he ducked the spike. He hit a couple of shoulder tackles. Cena put Solo down and then he hit him with the five knuckle shuffle. He hoisted Solo up for the attitude adjustment. Solo slipped out and he put Cena down with a Samoan drop for a two count. A Samoan doing a Samoan drop. I've never heard of such a thing. Yeah, Daddy Ugarte in the chat says, Peacemaker is just waiting for the strike to be over to film season two. That's right. He's got to save all of his strength to be Peacemaker. Apparently that first season was a big hit. I still haven't seen it. Solo hit Cena with a running hip attack in the corner. Cena briefly came back. He went up top. He put Solo down with a crossbody block for two. That's the most dangerous thing you will see John Cena doing during this latest run. He does go to the top. He hits a crossbody block. It looks fine. That's the only time you're going to see him leaving his feet. So Cena hoists Solo up again. Again, Solo slips out, and he super kicks Cena. Solo sets up for the Samoan spike. John gave him a choke slam for a near fall. When was the last time we saw John Cena hit a choke slam? So Cena went for the attitude adjustment. Solo slipped out yet again. And Solo put Cena down with a spinning Solo slam for a near fall. Solo went for the Samoan spike. Cena blocked it again before applying the STF. That didn't work. And Solo caught Cena with the Samoan spike out of nowhere. So Sokoa falls to the mat. And he stays down momentarily while the announcers play up the fact that he would have been victorious had he gone over and covered John Cena, but he didn't cover him. Solo then hits Cena with a second Samoan spike. And when Cena stood back up, Solo put him down with a third Samoan spike. So now I'm seeing this, and I'm saying Solo has to win this match at this point. And they're stalling to make you think that Cena's going to make a comeback. But at this point, I'm like, he's hit this guy with his finish three straight times. And how many people on the main roster have we seen Solo beat with that spike? Just one, right? Now he hit John Cena with three. There's no way that John Cena can beat this guy now. Solo has to win this match, right? This is what I'm thinking. So third Samoan spike. And Solo is waiting for Cena to stand up. He ends up hitting him, I think it was like four or five of them. Might have hit five. Michael Cole at this point is questioning if Solo was even trying to win the match because he's not even trying to go for the pin. So even after all the Samoan spikes, this was my favorite part of the entire match. This was great. He's taken about 18 Samoan spikes at this point, it feels like, okay? And the camera zooms in on John Cena, who's laying on the mat. And John Cena is basically openly having a conversation with Solo Sikoa. He's talking up to the man, obviously trying to communicate either the next spot or do this, stand here, right? Because he's the ring general. He's directing traffic. Do you have to put the fucking camera on the guy when he does that? We know that John Cena loves to call spots. This was no different. I'm not talking about the bald spot that he meant, that Smitty mentioned. He loves to call spots in these matches. And it's one thing if he says it out loud, right? I mean, the microphones pick it up. There's not a whole lot you can do about that. But why do you have to show the guy? He just took 18 fucking 28 Samoan spikes and he's having a conversation with the guy. He's talking to the referee. Hey, how's the weather? Yeah, it's pretty hot around here. The fuck? But I laughed. I said, never change, because it's John Cena. You just have to accept it. You have to accept him for the way that he is. It will never, ever change. This is just what he does. He's done it his entire career. Now he doesn't care, because he doesn't have to. So it's even worse. It's even more egregious now than it was when he was still active full time. So Solo then sits Cena up, sits him on his ass, and he leans down and he begins to jab him in the throat several times, like spike after spike after spike after spike. And then finally he covers him and he pins John Cena in the middle of the ring, clean as a sheet, 1, 2, 3. So Solo goes to the back. He just picked up the biggest win of his career. Cena is given a standing ovation by the fans here in Riyadh and the announcers as he gets to his feet. And Cena waves to the crowd and he exits the ring, and Michael Cole says that John Cena has meant more to his career than anybody in this business, and he says he is truly the greatest of all time. Coming into this match, I didn't know if they were going for option A or option B. Option A was the feel-good moment. John Cena finally gets that big win that has eluded him for 5 years. Option B was John Cena, the veteran, coming back, knowing he's on borrowed time until he leaves, right? And this was probably it for him. Like, for sure, this was probably his last match. He might pop up on SmackDown and say goodbye, but this is it. Cena was only supposed to be back through the end of October. So this is already extra credit. This is already bonus, which, you know, the fact that he came to the Saudi show here. Would they have him do the honors and put Solo Sikoa over? Because Solo is an important part of the bloodline, and Solo has been, he's not as protected as he was early on in his run. You know, Solo's only been on the main roster a little over a year. But for a good portion of that year, they really protected him. And he didn't take too many losses. Lately, he's been taking more losses than ever before. But they do largely protect him. And so they went with option B. And this was the biggest win of Solo Sikoa's career. And the key, as always, is now in the follow-up. I always say, the key is in the follow-up. Austin Theory beat John Cena at WrestleMania. He's in a worse position now than he was back in April. And Solo Sikoa could easily fall into the same rut. Now, he has the advantage of who his cousin is. And so he's tied in with the bloodline. He's tied in with Paul Heyman and Roman Reigns. So he's going to be protected in a way that Austin Theory was not. Austin Theory beat John Cena, and he was basically forgotten about. And now he's coming off as, honestly, the weak link in a tag team with Grayson Waller, who I think is more entertaining than he is. Solo Sikoa is not going to fall quite that far down the tree the way that Austin Theory has. But the key is going to be in the follow-up now. They fumbled it with one guy. I think with Solo, he'll be okay, because you could tell they have bigger plans in mind for him. When Solo eventually stops buying into the bullshit that Roman Reigns is feeding him and he breaks away, that's going to be the last straw before Roman loses that title, whether it's to Cody Rhodes or somebody else. When he loses Solo, he's got nobody else. What's Paul Heyman going to do, right? So that's where things are headed as far as the bloodline goes. But I want to say a word here about John Cena and what John Cena did here, because he took the clean loss in the middle of the ring to this guy. Even the win that Austin Theory got at WrestleMania was not clean, right? There was some hijinks involved there. I think he low-blowed him, right? It was a low blow. It wasn't really a totally clean win. It was clean enough, but not totally clean. There was no ambiguity here about this. Like, he got his ass beat. Plain and simple. In the middle of the ring. And he gave him a lot in that match. Right, there was maybe more back and forth than I was even expecting. But again, Cena mostly sold. He made a little bit of a comeback, and he still lost in the end. It felt like a match that was building to a John Cena win. They kind of threw me for a loop there, because the way things were building, I thought Cena was winning, and then he didn't. And I was really happy that he didn't. And John Cena, people will say a lot of things about John Cena, or they did, you know, back then, and people that didn't like him, and Super Cena, and burying people, and all kinds of stuff. But he did the unselfish thing in a business that traditionally, when it comes to top guys, is filled with very selfish people. And it would have been very easy for John Cena to come back and say, here's what we're going to do, right? Take charge and say, this is how it's going to be. I came back. I'm willing to come back and work with you, but right, I gotta protect my name. I gotta protect my image. I gotta protect, you know, the John Cena persona. Would have been very easy for him to do that, and he didn't do that. He's been very unselfish this entire run. because he's a smart man and he realizes that the next time he comes back a year from now or 2 years from now, those people are going to lose their fucking minds because he's John Cena. He's got a level of equity that not a lot of people in this company have. And it's almost like no matter what you do to him, he's protected no matter what. He's reached into that rarefied air where you can't really do anything to him. So he went out there and he did the right thing. And I salute him for that because there are a lot of other people that would not have been as giving as he was. But he comes in, he's like, yeah, whatever. What do you want me to do? You want me to pretend to be a backstage interviewer and act like a goof? All right, fine. You want me to go out there and job for this guy and job for that guy and try to put him over? Okay. That's why Vince McMahon in WWE loves him so much and they call him the GOAT. I mean, in the annals of all the top stars they've ever had, I mean, think about it. He's probably, of all those people that you can name, whether it's Austin, whether it's Hogan, Savage, and Bret, and Shawn, and Randy Orton, especially in his younger days, they were all a pain in the ass for one reason or another at some point. John Cena is he's the opposite of that. He's safe. He's the safe choice. That's why they went with him for so long. That's why they love him so much. Every time he comes out, he's the greatest of all time. You don't necessarily have to believe that, but that's what they're going to call him. So respect to him. He put Solo over and he did it in a very strong way. Doesn't have to do that. They're very, it's a very beneficial thing for them to have somebody like that who they know they can bring him back and put him on a house show. He'll move 1,000 tickets. Doesn't matter. The match itself got very, with the constant attempts at the finishers, the AA and the Samoan Spike, it got very repetitive there. That I didn't like, that aspect of it. That's what I hated so much about that second John Cena Rock match at WrestleMania. I hated that match. And that's one of the biggest reasons why. The over-reliance on, oh, goes for a rock bottom, nope, reverse out of it. Attitude adjustment, nope, slips out of it. Over and over and over again. And we had a little bit of that here in this match, so that I didn't like. But it accomplished what it set out to do. We got an impromptu Miz TV segment. Speaking of things I didn't like. We got an impromptu Miz TV segment where he introduced Ibrahim Al-Hajjaj as his guest. They said he's one of the biggest movie stars in all of Saudi Arabia. Apparently, he starred in a comedy called Sitar. I think he was the lead role in it. I think he becomes a freestyle wrestler. It's a comedy that came out last year. So he got a big reaction coming out to the ring. They were interrupted almost immediately by Grayson Waller. If you had Earth 1 and Earth 2, you would have basically Miz 1 and Miz 2. So Grayson Waller is Miz 2. So Miz 2 comes out, and he doesn't like this Miz TV shit. He says, get all that crap out of the ring, the director's chairs and all that, and bring out a real talk show set. And so they have production assistants who come out, and they bring all the Grayson Waller effect stuff out to the ring. Miz complained that he had been in WWE for 20 years while Waller had been in the company for 20 minutes. And Miz and Waller, they bickered a little bit while Ibrahim stood between them. He said that he came to WWE to be on the hottest talk show. And Waller put his arm around him. And then he said, and that's Miz TV. And Waller took offense to this and he told Ibrahim to get out of his ring. So Miz tried to step forward. And Ibrahim put his arm out and he stopped him. And he struck a fighting stance and Waller kicked him in the gut. Miz then put Waller down with a big boot. This all ended with Miz laying Waller out with a skull crushing finale. And then Al-Hajjaj gave him a people's elbow to close things out. I didn't care about any of this. You know what I liked about this? The fact that it gave me a chance to catch up on my notes. So I could jot my thoughts down on, I was still running behind here on what happened at the end of the previous match. So I'm actually glad they put this in the middle as a buffer. One of the things I actually like about the WWE shows like this that I hate about the AEW shows, as great as the matches are on the AEW pay-per-views, I mean, they don't give you a chance to breathe. It's just one after the other, after the other, after the other, and you just don't have time to process everything. So I like the fact that they put this out there because I was able to catch up. So, but the live crowd enjoyed it. So there you go. They were having fun with the segment. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Now, if you've never heard of data brokers, let me school you. They're basically the middlemen for collecting and selling all of those digital footprints that you leave behind. And they can piece together detailed profiles that include your browsing history, your online searches, and even your location data. And then they turn around and they sell your profile off to a company that delivers you a targeted ad. And that sounds all well and good until you learn that those same data brokers are also selling your information to the Department of Homeland Security and even the IRS. I pay enough to the tax man. I don't need him knocking on my door. So to mask my digital footprints, I protect myself with ExpressVPN. One of the easiest ways for brokers to tie your data back to you is through your device's unique IP address. We all have one, at least one, depending on how many devices we have, and they reveal information about your location. So when you're connected to ExpressVPN, your IP address is hidden, which makes it much harder for prying eyes to be able to figure out who you are. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of network traffic to keep your data safe from hackers on public Wi-Fi. That's why I use ExpressVPN on all my devices, phone, computer, even my Wi-Fi router. All I do is tap one button to turn it on and I'm protected. It's that easy. So make sure your online activity and data is protected with the best VPN money can buy. Visit expressvpn.com/solomonster right now and get 3 extra months free through my special link. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. expressvpn.com/solomonster to learn more. Rey Mysterio, one-on-one with Logan Paul for the United States Championship. 1 year ago on this very show, Logan Paul had an excellent match in the main event with Roman Reigns for the Undisputed Championship. And here we are 1 year later, and again, he is challenging for a title. They aired a video. This is part of Logan's entrance. And they showed Logan Paul standing in the middle of the desert next to a dune buggy. And then he drove the dune buggy around very wildly in the sand. They cut to Logan driving down a city street while talking about how he's going to become the next U.S. champ. And they showed him pulling into the arena. They cut to the announcers for a moment. And then they cut back to the stage. And we see Logan Paul coming out in the dune buggy on stage. This was a weird one, this match here, because I felt like they were having a good match and the crowd just didn't care. And this was really the point where the crowd sort of died for a while. The crowd didn't really seem to care about either of the women's matches at all. But this part of the show is where they died for a few matches. And it took Cody Rhodes coming out later on to bring them back up. So, yeah, it was just weird because I thought it was good, but crowd didn't seem to agree. Logan rolled through an early Mysterio crossbody block attempt, and then he picked him up on his shoulders. He ran Ray into the corner. Paul followed up with a moonsault, and he got a 2 count out of it. He threw some body shots at Ray, whipped him into the opposite corner, and Ray stumbled out. He collapsed. Logan hit a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker for a 2 count, and Logan pressed Ray over his head, and then he dropped him, and he hit the ropes. And he splashed him. He pulled an Ultimate Warrior out here. Of all the people to emulate, he decides to emulate the Ultimate Warrior. So he did not win with that move. It's amazing that the Warrior won as many matches as he did with that move back in the day. So Logan was on the offense for a while. Ray was able to avoid him on a charge into the corner. Logan went through the ropes and he collided with the ring post. He fell out to the floor. Ray went up top for a seated senton, followed by a springboard crossbody for 2. Logan came back with a buckshot lariat. His knee buckled a little bit. They did acknowledge it on commentary. I don't think it was meant to be part of the story or anything like that. He's lucky he didn't tear. I think that, isn't that how he tore his knee last time, I think? It might have been on a buckshot lariat. That might have been where he tore the, was it ACL or MCL, whatever it was. So he only got a 2 count out of it. Ray ducked a punch, and he put Paul in the crossface. And Logan reached the bottom rope to break the hold. And then Ray went for a springboard moonsault. And clearly he was going to come up short on this moonsault. And I'm not really exaggerating when I say that Logan Paul saved this man's life. Logan Paul saved Rey Mysterio's life because he was too far away. And I don't know if you really blame him for that being out of position or just Rey for, again, clearly he was going to undershoot the moonsault. But I will say for someone with as little experience as Logan Paul has, right? We talk about how he looks like a natural in the ring. Stuff like that is what is really most impressive. Because for someone with his level of experience, his level of ring awareness in a situation like that is very, very good. So he could see what was about to happen, and he was able to get into position just in the nick of time, and he caught Rey coming down before Rey. I mean, he looked like he was coming straight down on his head. And he caught him, and he had enough sense to turn it into a power slam, and he got a near fall out of it. Now, I don't know if that was going to be the plan anyway for him to hit, you know, he was going to catch Rey regardless and then hit the power slam. But that was some very quick thinking on his part, and I certainly hope when they got backstage, Rey gave him a hearty handshake and a thank you for saving his ass on that spot. So Logan went to the ropes. He did the Eddie Guerrero shimmy. Rey avoided whatever he was going for when he came off the top. Rey went for a 619 that got blocked. Mysterio kicked Paul from the apron and then went up top. Logan cut him off and then got him in an electric chair position while he was standing on the middle rope. And Rey countered into a sunset bomb. Logan went flying halfway across the ring. He took this ridiculous bump. And then Rey followed that up with a code red for a near fall. All of a sudden, a random guy at ringside, who they identified only on commentary as one of Logan Paul's cronies. He wasn't even good enough to get a name. This unnamed crony, he passed a pair of brass knuckles to Logan Paul. Now, this is how he beat Ricochet last time we saw him. So Rey shoved Logan chest first into the corner, and when he did so, the brass knucks went flying out of his hand, and they landed on the floor outside. Logan sees this, he's like, oh, shit. So now the cameraman is outside. You could see crouched down is the nameless crony, and now he's slowly, you know, he's crouched, but he's making his way over. He's going to go pick up the knucks, and when he goes to pick them up, Santos Escobar, who they didn't show us his face right away. You just saw someone's legs jumping from over the barricade. He places his foot on top of the knucks. And then they pan up and we see that it's Escobar in his street clothes. So the crony backs away. The crony didn't take a bump or anything. He just sort of backed away. Now I'm looking at Escobar as he picks up the brass knucks. And I said, here's where it happens. Logan Paul's going to have the referee distracted. And Escobar is going to just fucking wallop Rey right in the face with the brass knucks. They didn't do that, but before he went chasing after the crony, he puts the brass knucks down back on the apron. And then he runs and he chases the guy off into the crowd. So now Rey gets Logan Paul in position in the ropes for a 619. Logan looks down on the apron. He sees the brass knucks. So he picks him up. Rey comes in, he hits the 619. And then Rey sets up for a springboard move, a springboard splash. And as he comes off the ropes, Logan Paul, he's got the brass knucks, which the referee doesn't see. And he clobbers him with a right hand, just blasts him right in the face with the loaded right hand. And he covers Rey Mysterio and he pins him to become the new United States champion. I love, by the way, how Logan Paul completely no-sold the 619. He takes the 619. And then 3 seconds later, here comes Rey, just punches him, covers him. No selling of the 619 whatsoever. But yes, this little pissant. Gilly said, well, that little pissant now is the new United States champion, and thy name is Logan Paul. After the match, Logan leaned down in the corner where Rey was sitting, and he told Rey that he was just doing what he had to do. And Rey looked up at him and goes, you know what you did. And Logan played dumb and said, I don't know what you're talking about. I love you, man. I love you. Rey's like, you know what you did. And Logan walked off. Again, I thought they had a good match, even if the crowd didn't really seem to agree with me on that. It wasn't one of Logan Paul's best matches. He's definitely had better. Even the match with Roman last year, I thought was better. As silly as it is, that Escobar would place the Nux back on the, and it was silly that he would do that. I think what we'll come to find out at some point is that he did that on purpose. Right? We know what this is building to. It's building to WrestleMania. And it's not going to be for the United States Championship after all, but they're building to Rey Mysterio against Santos Escobar. They're building to a fracture within the LWO. And what that means for Carlito and the other members, do they go heel and align with Escobar? I don't know. I don't know about that. I would think they do. And because Rey doesn't need to be with the LWO. The whole point of putting Rey Mysterio with the LWO, really, honestly, should have been to get to this point. At some point, he is going to put over Santos Escobar, right? Escobar is the future. That's why he was put in the LWO in the first place. Otherwise, what's the point? It was to help get this guy over. Well, now they're moving in that direction. They're clearly building to a match. They're building to a heel turn. So that's why that spot was done. And, you know, I only hope this as far as Logan Paul is concerned. Because I like Logan Paul in the ring. Yeah, he's a very dynamic performer. He's better than he has any right to be. And his matches are generally fun to watch. Some people think it's too spotty, right? Those are probably the same people that don't like watching AEW. They think it's too many flips and spots and choreographed stuff. So it might not be your style. But for the limited amount of time he's been doing this, you would watch him. If you didn't know any better, you would never know he's an outside celebrity who's coming in three times a year to wrestle matches. He looks like he's part of the roster. He's bigger than probably half the fucking people on the roster physically. But in the ring, the guy can go. I don't have an issue with him being the United States champion. What I have an issue with is if you put the U.S. title on somebody who is not committed to making more consistent, regular appearances on television on a show where you already have a part-time absentee champion. That is what I am curious to see. How often do we see him now on the show? Is he going to be at Survivor Series? Is Logan going to be in a match at Survivor Series? Are we not going to see him again for a while? Right, I would expect he'll be on SmackDown this Friday, but we don't know. We only have his schedule up to this point to go by, and it's not looking good. And I don't know how you can have two singles champions like that making rare appearances on the show when this show should revolve around people who want to be the champion. It's hard to do that when your champions are not around. So I hope they have an agreement with him, and we'll start seeing him more often on television. He's got two very obvious challengers between now and WrestleMania. Kevin Owens, which they already teased on SmackDown last week. They had their little exchange in the hallway. Kevin Owens is one, and LA Knight is the other. Because I don't know what the hell else you have him doing at WrestleMania if he's not the one challenging Logan Paul. He's not wrestling Roman Reigns, and it doesn't look like he's going to Raw. He's not winning the Royal Rumble. So Kevin Owens and LA Knight, maybe in that order, they're probably up next on the list for LA Knight going into Logan Paul going into WrestleMania, and I would expect that at WrestleMania he will drop the belt. That seems to be the direction now going forward, but you still got to get him on the shows. He has to have some kind of presence on these shows more than he does now. And if he does, then cool. I have no issue with it. But if not, then this is a fucking dumb move, putting this belt on somebody like that. We get enough of that on SmackDown as it is. But again, his win here, this title win, is the top story, or it was a few hours ago, on TMZ.com. And WWE loves the publicity that they get from stuff like this. So they're going to love the publicity they get from Logan Paul taking that belt everywhere he goes. And when he does his podcast, it'll be right there with him, right? That's why he's the champion right now. We had Bianca Belair against Io Sky for the WWE Women's Championship. Their second PLE match of the year. Their first one was back at Backlash. It was an excellent match. This was not that. They worked hard. It was good, but it was not at the level of their last match. And a big part of why, frankly, was just the apathy from the crowd. The crowd did not care about this at all. But it did build to something at the very end here. That young lady on your screen right there, we're going to talk about her here in a second. This was the big climax here at the end of this match. Bianca started off hot, hit a standing vertical suplex for a near fall. Io started working over Bianca's storyline injured knee with a dragon screw. Later on, Bianca placed Io on the top rope. She set up for a superplex. Io slipped underneath her and put her in a tree of woe. Io then hit a drop kick to the bad knee, covered her for a two count. And then Io applied a stretch muffler. Always love when Brock used to do that. Remember the Brock lock? Back when Brock would do more than just suplex people. Believe it or not, Brock Lesnar actually, he did know how to wrestle more than just, you know, four moves. And he used to do the Brock lock back in like 03. He used to love that move. So now Bayley shows up and I just groaned. Here we go, right? Knew it was coming, but still, so much interference on this show. Bayley shows up at ringside and Bianca had Io pinned. Bayley, though, climbs up onto the apron and she distracts the referee. Bianca punches Bayley off the apron. And then she clotheslines Io over the top rope to the floor. And Bianca does a dive out onto Bayley. Io then accidentally hits Bayley. So Bianca then runs Io into the barricade, rolls her back into the ring. She starts climbing into the ring, and Bayley reaches up and grabs her legs to prevent her from getting back inside. So Bianca hoists her up for the KOD, right? She's still outside the ring. She hoists Bayley up for the KOD when Kairi Sane, look at this, Christian, get out of here. Look at this, how's your dad? There she is, looking great. She looks great. I don't know if she's cosplaying. That's what everybody does these days. They cosplay as some kind of character or anime character or something. All I know is that she looks great. It's Kairi Sane. And so Kairi Sane reveals herself, and whatever you would define an anti-reaction as being, that is what Kairi Sane got here when she revealed that she was back in WWE. This crowd clearly did not know her and or did not care because she got no reaction. Now, when certain people started to finally see her face, maybe at first they couldn't really tell who it was, and she's, again, dressed a little bit differently than she was the last time we saw her. People started to make a little bit of noise, but holy shit. If you had to define an anti-reaction, that is what Kairi Sane got here for this big reveal at the end of this match. So Kairi climbed up on the barricade and launched herself with a knee strike to Bianca. This is after she initially attacked Bianca. Now she hits her with a knee strike. And Bianca basically hurls herself forward into the ring post. Inside, Io is counting along with the referee because the referee has started his count. Hey, Holiday 197, welcome to the channel. Justin G, thank you for that gifted membership. Holden my nuts is now a channel man. Wonderful. He'll be like the black sheep of the family. Holden my nuts. That's the name. Holden my nuts. Welcome to the channel. Holy shit. Holden, what's going on, Holden? Oh my God. So Io's in the ring and she's with the referee. Count, right? Bianca's outside the ring. So Bianca ends up making it back into the ring before the count of 10. And Io hits her with her over the moonsault and she retains the WWE Women's Championship. After the match, Kairi gets in the ring and she hits her top rope elbow drop, which is just a thing of fucking beauty. The best diving elbow in the business. Still, Kairi Sane. And she drops it down on top of Bianca. Kairi and Io then embrace and the camera pans over to Bayley on the outside, who's looking in and sees this and she's surprised and she's concerned. And Michael Cole on commentary acknowledges the fact. But the last time we saw Kairi Sane on WWE television, which was a couple years ago, she was attacked and taken out by Bayley. So I was wondering if they were going to acknowledge that or not. So at least they're not treating us like idiots and pretending that that didn't happen, right? They acknowledged it. And so now we have Io bringing her friend back to the company, bringing her friend in for some assistance because she doesn't trust Bayley. And why should she? right? There's been different examples over these past few months of Bayley saying, oh yeah, Io, she'll defend her title against this person, no problem. And then Io says, well, wait, you don't talk for me. Look at what happened on SmackDown last night. They were in the back. The main event was Bianca against Bayley, and Bayley's talking to Damage Control and saying, you know, tonight I'm going to take out Bianca Belair, and maybe I'll be the one challenging you at Crown Jewel tomorrow for the women's title. Io Sky didn't take that as a joke, even though Bayley said, oh, I'm just kidding. It's a joke, right? Io didn't seem to think so. So Io doesn't trust this woman. She brings in her friend. And you know what this means, finally, is that we are finally headed towards the end of Damage Control. And the only reason it didn't happen sooner is because Dakota Kai got hurt. And so Bayley and Io became like a tag team for a while. So this prolonged things a little bit because of the injury, but we're still going to end up in the same place where Damage Control soon enough will be coming to an end. And again, this may not have been the right place to re-debut her on the show. This probably would have been better off being saved for SmackDown this Friday. Because I can't imagine that the reaction she got is the reaction that they were hoping for when they booked this. But I am very happy to see her back. I'm very happy to see her and Io put together. And I'm seeing rumors online that there could be others coming in as well. There could be other friends of EO's, at least one being brought in. I don't know who that would be. I don't know how reliable that is, but I'm seeing this mentioned today. So I look forward to that. Cody Rhodes. I kind of want to keep the image up, but I guess we should go back. I guess we'll go back to these two. Cody Rhodes, one-on-one with Damian Priest. By the way, I should check and just see where we are as far as the likes goal is concerned, and we have officially surpassed the goal, so I thank you for that, although we're not at 500 yet. Come on, let's get to 500. You can do that. Do what LA Knight could not do tonight on this show. Prove to me that you are a winner. Get me to 500. I want to be a winner. I don't want to be like LA Knight tonight at the end of the show. Cody Rhodes against Damian Priest. Look at that. People finally woke up for Cody Rhodes. Rubbing their eyes. Oh, man. Ugh. Oh, it's Cody, everybody. Whoa! Right? They wanted to do the whoa part of his theme song. I'll tell you what, if that part didn't get them up, the fucking pyro would have. Probably woke up all of Saudi Arabia. And yet, I still get a knuckle dragger every now and then on my social media who tells me, Cody's not really over. He's not really that over. So Damian attacked Cody while he was still on the ropes doing his entrance. Cody was selling the bad ankle that the Judgment Day had worked over a few weeks ago. Priest put Cody down with a big clothesline at ringside, and he tried to put him on the announce desk, and Cody slipped away, shoved him into the ring post. Cody performed a suicide dive that led to Priest ending up on top of the announce desk. Cody then joined him on top. Priest fought back and hit the Reckoning on top of the table, which is his version of a crossroads. It's his old finish. He hit Cody with the crossroads. So Priest brought Cody back in the ring. He set up for the move again. Cody, though, countered into the crossroads, but he sold the ankle, and he could not make the cover. Ah, Jazz, I appreciate that, man. Look at Jazz. Jazz says, I like the video across all three of my YouTube accounts. See, that right there is dedication. I appreciate that. That's how I like to see it done right there. So here comes Finn Balor down the ramp. More interference on this fucking show. Here comes Finn Balor. Cody turned his attention to Balor, who climbed up onto the apron. JD McDonagh entered the ring. He tried to hit Cody from behind, but Cody caught him, punched him. Priest put Cody down with a gigantic South of Heaven chokeslam. Cody got some ridiculous height on this chokeslam. It reminded me of the chokeslam that Brock Lesnar took from The Undertaker in that dark segment on SmackDown many years ago. I think it was before their biker chain match. I think it was maybe a No Mercy. I mean, I've never seen someone get that kind of height on a chokeslam before as much as Brock did with The Undertaker. This was pretty close. Cody went up pretty high for it. So he ate the chokeslam. Only got an earfall, though. Balor called to the back, though, for help. He called for the reinforcements. And the reinforcements were Dominic Mysterio coming out with a steel chair. Once Dominik arrived at ringside, Jey Uso was there to greet him with a super kick, and the people went nuts for Jey Uso. And he super kicked Balor, and he super kicked JD McDonagh. And then he grabbed the chair, and he chased them all to the back. And Cody rolled up a distracted Damian Priest for a two count. Cody followed up with a Cody cutter, and then later a top rope Cody cutter. And then finally, he hit him with three straight crossroads, and he pinned him to win the match. This was a television match. We knew this going in. This match did not need to happen on this show. This was the buffer match before the main event. And the people love seeing Cody, and they love seeing Jey Uso. So that's why it was on the show. But it was a TV match, nothing more, nothing less. It was also the third straight match with outside interference on this show. Back to back to back. And we were not done yet, because we still had our main event, which was up next. It was Roman Reigns defending the undisputed WWE Universal title against LA Knight. Amosin, thank you for the sub. Welcome to the channel. LA Knight came out to a huge reaction, and there were tons of these little LA Knight signs all over the hard camera, the entire section. Not one person, not one, did not have one of these LA Knight signs that they clearly handed out that they were holding up on camera. So it looked great. It's like those old Cesaro section signs that you would see. Everybody had an LA Knight sign when he came out. Michael Cole said that only two men stand ahead of Roman Reigns in his quest on his path to become the longest reigning champion of all time, Bruno Sammartino and Hulk Hogan. Let us take a moment to say a prayer for the memory here in WWE history for Bob Backlund, who apparently has been forgotten about, even though Michael Cole himself on commentary before, in talking about all the people that Roman Reigns is getting close to, Pedro Morales, right? He passed him. He's mentioned Bob Backlund before. No mention of Bob Backlund. It's like he never even held the title. And even if WWE is finally officially acknowledging and recognizing Antonio Inoki's little six-day title run in Japan in 1979, which in the past they've never like formally officially acknowledged that he is a former WWE champion. Even if all of a sudden they're going to acknowledge that Antonio Inoki is a former WWE champion, Bob Backlund ended up getting the belt back and holding it for over 1,400 days. Roman Reigns is nowhere near 1,400. But they said two people. It's not like, you know, oh, he just forgot. It's like they've intentionally cut him out and they're saying there's only two people left. It's despicable. The disrespect for Mr. Backlund. I hope he's doing well, by the way. I had seen something where, I don't know health-wise how well he's doing, but I hope Bob Backlund is doing okay. So Knight came out right out of the gate, got a swinging neck breaker. Roman came back and took him right down with a back elbow. And then he mocked his chant, which was kind of funny. Roman was kind of mocking the LA Knight chant there. I did laugh. You know, you all make a good point about Backlund. Technically, it's way more than 1,400 days because he never did submit. He never did tap out in the camel clutch against the Iron Sheik in Madison Square Garden. So technically, he's been a champion this entire time. Somebody add that up and tell me how many days. How many days has it been that Bob Backlund has been the WWE champion? So Knight came back with a shoulder tackle from the apron back into the ring. Then he hit his power slam. He was setting up for the elbow drop that he does, not the Kairi Sane one. Paul Heyman distracted him from the floor. I don't know what Paul Heyman was trying to do. He was trying to pull himself up into the ring, not doing a very good job. He just wanted to get the guy's attention. And that allowed Roman to roll out to the floor on the other side of the ring. Knight, though, caught him with a basement drop kick through the ropes. Then he came off the apron with a clothesline, and Roman was down. Can't win the title on a countout, though. Knight cleared off the announce desk. Roman, though, nailed him from behind and then drove him face first into the ring steps. Roman got him back in the ring, and he was wearing him down. This is where things slowed down for a while. And these fucking people, not all of them, but there was a loud enough section of people in the crowd here in the middle of this match that started chanting here in Saudi Arabia for CM Punk. random CM Punk match chant in the middle of this match. So Knight finally started making a comeback and got a bulldog from the middle rope. That gave him some time to get some air back in those lungs. We got the yay boo spot that led to Knight hitting a Russian leg sweep and then back up, and he drops Roman with the DDT. Only got a two count out of it. And the crowd is with him, right? The crowd is with LA Knight. Again, they were very flat for the middle part of this show. Cody woke him up, and they were all in with LA Knight here in this main event. So Reigns came back. He planted Knight with a Uranagi for two. And now it was time for the Superman punch. But LA Knight sidestepped it and got Reigns up on his shoulders, and he dropped him with a neck breaker. But he did not cover him. He hits the ropes, he comes off, he gets caught with a Superman punch, and Roman covers, but only gets two. So Roman goes to the corner, and he fires up. He's setting up here for a spear. Knight, though, leapfrogs him, and Roman goes face first into the middle turnbuckle. He places Roman on top, he follows him up, looking for a superplex. I knew what was coming here. I said he's going to get knocked down, he's going to go for the leap, and I hope he sticks the landing. So sure enough, Roman hits him with a headbutt, LA Knight falls off the ropes, and then he does his running leap, and he stuck the landing, and he followed through with a superplex. Follow that up with a standing elbow drop off the ropes. He covered him, only got a two count. Solo Sikoa is now on the ramp. Here we go. And Solo is surrounded by officials. I saw Shane Helms was in there, and they're preventing him from coming down to the ring. While that is going on, back down at ringside, Jimmy Uso is there, and he drags Roman out to the floor. He's checking on him. Are you okay? Knight reaches through the ropes to grab at Jimmy, and then Roman connects with a Superman punch. Knocks him backwards into the ring. Roman gets back inside. He nails the spear. That's it. He covers him. LA Knight kicks out. They had me there for a second. I said, that's it? One fucking spear? Thankfully, he kicked out. And the crowd comes alive. This makes four straight matches now on this show with outside interference. Four. Roman is back up. He calls Knight a flash in the pan. He's talking smack. Roman sucks chants from the crowd. And he locks LA Knight in the guillotine choke. This is what he beat Bill Goldberg with, I believe, in Saudi Arabia. Knight, though, is fighting out of it, or he's trying to. He gets to his feet, and he does break the hold, but Roman grabs it again. He backs Roman into the corner. He lets go, but then he grabs it a third time. Knight lifts Roman up. He drapes him on the top rope, and then he hits the BFT. Now, Roman is right by the ropes, and I was surprised. He hits the BFT, and there was no real reaction for it. I mean, that's his finishing move. I'm guessing the crowd could see Jimmy Uso was outside. He's right by the ropes, right? He's not going to win. But he hits the BFT. It doesn't really get the reaction that I was expecting it to. And Jimmy, of course, reaches in. He grabs Roman's foot, and he places it on the bottom rope to break the fall. So now LA Knight is just burning a hole through Jimmy Uso outside the ring. He goes out after Jimmy. Jimmy is like, no, I like you. I like you. And Knight rams him headfirst into the top of the announce desk over and over and over again. Here comes Roman Reigns, and he gets the same treatment. Face first into the top of the announce desk. Knight sends him into the ring post. He lifts up Jimmy. He puts Jimmy through the announce desk.
Thank you. And shoosh. And thank you.
Hey, Holiday, thank you. Holiday 197.
Thank you. And shoosh. And thank you. And shoosh.
So then Roman is back now that Jimmy Uso has been put through the announce desk. As soon as LA Knight turns around, there's Roman. And he spears him through the barricade by the timekeeper's area, which is such an overdone spot. I feel like every Brock Lesnar match, we would have that spot. We see it so often at this point. It just, every time we see it, it just loses value. So anyway, he picks up LA Knight. He puts him back in the ring. Now, I'm watching this, by the way. All of this is going on. And the referee is in the ring, and he's just watching this. And I'm like, referee! Jimmy, I mean, all this is going on. I mean, I guess in a way, like, what's he going to do, right? Is he going to disqualify Roman Reigns? I mean, that would be a pretty shit finish. But it's preposterous. if I know you got to turn your brain off with some of this stuff, but this has been going on now for 3.5 years. You would think at some point we got a new general manager on SmackDown. Why does Nick Aldis not go like he did on SmackDown last night? We have Bianca and Bayley in the main event. If you think about the logic of this, right? He goes over to Bayley and he says, I just want you to know the rest of Damage Control banned from ringside because I want to make sure we have a winner between you and Bianca. And we had a clean finish. Why wouldn't Nick Aldis say the same thing? You're setting a big main event up for a big event like this. Why doesn't he go to the Bloodline and Paul Heyman and say, going to be a great match at Crown Jewel, but the Bloodline banned from ringside. No Jimmy, no Solo. It's just one of those logic gaps. So we keep seeing the constant interference and the referee is standing there. And it's just ridiculous that it just happens over and over again. And seemingly nobody cares. We have a new GM and he doesn't lift a finger to do anything about it. Roman puts him back in the ring. He hits one final spear and he pins LA Knight. 1, 2, 3. Still your undisputed champion is Roman Reigns. A very good match marred by the usual Bloodline bullshit that we have been getting for the past 3.5 years. We get it every single time with Roman Reigns. I mean, you could set your fucking watch to it. By the way, tonight, daylight savings for those who forgot. So make sure you set your clocks back 1 hour for those who may have forgotten. But you could set your watch to this kind of stuff in all of these Roman Reigns main events. It was not a visual pin. I thought maybe they'd give him a visual pin, but they did give him the BFT, had the match won until Jimmy put the foot on the ropes. And so that was the out for LA Knight. That protects it because you could say he had the man beat and it took Jimmy Uso to save Roman Reigns and save his championship reign. And that's about as good as it's going to get because, again, he was not winning this match. Thankfully, we didn't get a dusty finish or anything like that. Some people were suggesting a dusty type finish. That would have been terrible. Make it so that LA Knight pins Roman Reigns and seemingly won the title and then take it away from him. Roman should not be pinned in a singles match at all until he loses the title for good. That will likely be at WrestleMania. You got your 40th WrestleMania coming up, right? You do it there. Don't do a dusty finish here. It would be kind of funny, I'm not going to lie, if they did a dusty finish of all things to Cody. That would be really, really cold, though, if they did that. But now we head to War Games. Now Crown Jewel is in the rear view. We look ahead to Survivor Series. War Games is now confirmed, so we know we're getting it. And LA Knight now has a bone to pick with the Bloodline. You know who else has a bone to pick with the Bloodline? Cody Rhodes. You know who else? Jey Uso. And Sami Zayn. And, wait for it, Randy Orton, who we know is coming back imminently. If not before Survivor Series, at Survivor Series. Maybe as a surprise. Although you run a certain risk, you do run a certain risk if you leave open a spot in War Games for a surprise in Chicago, and it's not CM Punk. So I would like to think that they're calculating, you know, that into their thinking here. Because conceivably, if you have an open spot in a War Games match, you know, you're in Chicago, a Survivor Series, you're going to have people thinking it's CM Punk, even though it's not. Randy Orton is the most likely option. Brock Lesnar is someone also. You could say, oh, maybe it's Brock. Maybe they're going to bring Brock back, and he'll be in the War Games match, right? So you have a few different possibilities, but they may not want to open themselves up to that, given where they're going to be. That's going to be up to them. But, again, you already have War Games. It's already there, right? You have the babyface team solidified. The only question now, who is going to be on the opposing side? We have this alliance that was forged by Rhea Ripley and Paul Heyman weeks ago between the Bloodline and the Judgment Day that has not been explored at all. Heading into War Games, though, it would make sense if they revisit that. And we have some combination of Roman Reigns and the other members of the Bloodline and the members of the Judgment Day, right? Whether Dominic fits in there or not, because it would be 5-on-5. Dominic may not fit. If you had Roman Reigns, let's say, in Solo Sikoa, then you could do Damian Priest and Finn Balor and Dominic Mysterio. But if you want Jimmy Uso in there, you got to have Jimmy in there. Because I'm looking at War Games, right? Here's the reason why Roman Reigns needs to be in Chicago at Survivor Series. If Roman Reigns is not going to be there, if Roman Reigns is not going to be in that match, It doesn't make any sense, right? Everything starts and stops with the bloodline with Roman Reigns. War Games is going to be a prelude to WrestleMania. What are the matches that are being set up for WrestleMania? Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes, Jey Uso and Jimmy Uso. They should be on opposing sides in a War Games match. So these reports about Roman not being at Survivor Series, I came from Meltzer. I have no reason to doubt, you know, that the plan is for Roman to take the rest of the year off. I think that's a mistake. I hope that report is wrong. Or if it's not, I hope they reconsider. Because Roman Reigns should be on that show. He should be in that match. And frankly, it would be ridiculous for him not to be. Put him in the fucking match. Overall, one of the weaker PLEs they've done all year. There were some good matches on the show. Great opener with Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre. Very good main event. But a lot of just flat stuff in the middle. We've seen some pretty strong Saudi shows. I think some of their recent shows, the last maybe at least two shows. I don't put this up there, you know, at the top of the list of the best shows they've done from Saudi Arabia. But again, if I had to rank it, I would say this was a solid 6, 6.5. I think that's a fair score for this show. Here's the Twitter poll. What did you think of Crown Jewel? I put the thumbs in the middle because people asked for it, so please don't ask me why it's in there. It's in there because people whine and complain, so I put it in there. So there you go. With over 1,000 votes in so far, 44% thumbs up, 36% thumbs in the middle, and 19% thumbs down. This really was the definition, I think, of a thumbs in the middle trending up. And these results are pretty much in line with that. So go vote at Solid Monster. Let me know what you think of this Crown Jewel show. Chime in, let your voice be heard. Numerically, which Saudi show was this? I don't know. I've lost track. This was either number 9 or number 10. Was this number 10? I want to say 9 or 10. But honestly, I stopped keeping track numerically, so I'm not sure where we are at this point. Let's start out here with Lady Fire Panda, who is not with us. I think she had to work. But she did chime in here. Says, if LA Knight wins and then Priest cashes in, I will laugh. Well, I guess you won't be laughing. Winter's Paw. I know maybe not a lot of people care, but I think it's pretty cool that Sean Bennett is a referee for this show. Pretty courageous on his part. Yeah, I believe he came out a couple of years ago, I think. So yeah, he was working some of the matches on the show tonight. So this was number 10? Okay. This was Sweet Saudi Money 10. Sweet Saudi Money number 10. The Real CSO2. I really wish Seth would stop attempting the Phoenix Splash, as his opponents always move out of the way every single time. Well, for years I said that you would think AJ Styles would learn his lesson to wear a cup. He was wrestling Shinsuke Nakamura, and he never learned his lesson, so I guess Seth is never going to learn his. Winter's Paw says, what is Triple H seeing Shayna? Bad makeup, bad outfits, no personality, bad matches. Conversely, Nia's outfit put the girls to shame. I wasn't really paying attention to Nia's outfit, so I can't speak to that, but you know, Shayna Baszler was booked as a killer in NXT. And she had a very successful run as the NXT Women's Champion. I don't know that they can ever get back to that again. I think that was the best use of Shayna Baszler. And I feel like now, she's been beaten so much, she's been around for so long, I don't know that you can ever recapture that kind of vibe, that energy that she had back at NXT. I think Shayna Baszler could be good as sort of a gatekeeper in that women's division. For some of the newer women who come in and need somebody that has some credibility to beat. If you start giving Shayna some dominant wins on TV, you can use her in a role like that. I just don't see her. She's never going to be positioned as the star of the division. It's just not going to happen. And Winter's Paw says Nia should have won. She's the only interesting one. Well, There's no accounting for good taste there with that super chat. But Winter's Paw, that is certainly an opinion. Not one that I agree with, but that is certainly an opinion. Tyler says, love you, Solo. Appreciate you so much. I appreciate you, Tyler. Thank you very much. Face Beerus says, on my way to a wedding on a 2-hour car ride, Crown Jewel is perfect entertainment for the trip. 10 Samoan spikes. Cena should be coughing blood. No, he got up when the match was over and he was fine. He waved to the crowd and he walked to the back. So apparently it wasn't as devastating as we were all led to believe it is. Some say he's still calling spots. Winter's Paw with the $10 super chat. Bayley looked confused. Appears Io made a call behind her back. That's exactly right. Maybe it's Bayley who turns good at the end. Did not think of that. Either way, the SmackDown Women's Division just got more interesting. It did get a little more interesting. It still needs a lot of work. But adding Kairi is, I think, a step. Sounds like they may be adding some more people soon. We'll see who that is. I always figured at the end of all this, Bayley probably would end up as a babyface just because she's been a heel now for... I mean, what has it been? 3 years? Going on 4, maybe? It's been a while. Actually, you know what? I think it might be going on almost 5 years. Okay. So, I figure she's probably due for a babyface turn next year. Prince Vegeta 95 with a 999. Out of these two reasons, why you think now, 7 months later, they did not do the title change at WrestleMania? You think they wanted Roman to hit 1,000 days, or they wanted to do the Rocky story with Cody? They wanted Roman to hit 1,000 days. That's why they did. And they got their 1,000 days, and again, who cares? Who cares? What is so impressive about 1,200 days when the person barely shows up, right? Like, storyline-wise, why should we be impressed by this? I mean, again, logically, put your thinking caps on for a second, okay? I know that's a dangerous thing to do with wrestling booking, but put your thinking cap on. You have Roman Reigns. He's got that final boss vibe, right? He does, right? He looks like the ultimate boss when he comes out. Roman is a star. But Roman Reigns being champion, when he barely defends the title, he'll go down this year, I think, with 5 total title defenses. Okay, so he barely defends the belt. And every time he does, he only wins with outside interference. Why is that supposed to be impressive? Doesn't sound very impressive to me. If you really stop and think about it, there's really nothing impressive about this. DEH, with Kairi and Io aligning and Bayley looking surprised, bringing back Sasha would make the most sense. Crowd was bad for the women tonight. That's a good point. If things go south for Bayley with damage control, she needs a friend. I don't think Mercedes is coming back to WWE anytime soon, but that would make sense, though, for her to come back and align with Bayley. Tyler says, if Punk returns to WWE, Survivor Series or the Rumble? I don't think he's coming back at Survivor Series or the Rumble. But of the two, it would be the Rumble. I think the Rumble as a surprise would make more sense than just having him walk out. Walk out and do what? You know? What's he going to do? I know Chicago will go, you know, crazy for him, but, you know, if he's in the Rumble, at least he can actually wrestle and work the match. Get the countdown, the buzzer, you hear Cult of Personality, it would get a great reaction. Angel Silva, not a fan of Seth Rollins hitting the curb stomp and then taking his sweet time to go for the pin. I know he's selling the effects of the match, but still. I would rather him sell the effect. If he's not going to get the pinfall off the stomp, I would rather he sell and then have a built-in excuse why his opponent would kick out. The worst thing to do would be for him to hit the stomp and constantly have people kicking out of it. Toxic Drip with $20. Bianca Belair finished was unexpected. The finish, he means, was unexpected. On the stream last night, I mentioned that Kairi would probably be on the show today. So, wasn't really unexpected for me, but For a lot of people, it probably was unexpected. For the people who don't live online constantly like I do, it was probably unexpected. Dev to Dust, Jenna Maraska against Charmel at Victory Road was bad. Right, okay, well, water is wet. Tell me something I don't know. ABK comes from out of nowhere with that $411 super chat bomb. John Cena calling spots is hilarious. It used to greatly annoy me, and now I kind of laugh at it now. ABK, I salute you, sir. Thank you. If he's still with us, I hope ABK is still with us. Andrew Carroll, buy, sell, rent on the move to WWE. Omega, MJF, Wardlow. Me personally, buy on MJF, I would rent on Omega, and I would sell on Wardlow. Although I think Wardlow would do very well in WWE. I do think he would do well, but at this moment right now, this version of Wardlow, yeah, no, I'm going to sell on that. Dev to Dust, Kyrie returning was awesome. Also, Judgment Day looked like Tim Burton, Joel Schumacher, Batman villain. I could see that. Ty Arts with a couple of super chats here. Thank you, Ty. Best career years for these four superstars, respectively. Sting, The Undertaker, Triple H, and Kane. We'll start from the end. Kane. And I really... You know, I think I might go Kane in... 2000. Kane was just a beast back then, man. You can't go wrong with 2000 or 2001. Maybe 2001. 2001 Kane. 2000 Triple H. For Undertaker, God, he was around for so long. How do you boil it down to just 1 year? I mean, my God. It's almost an impossible task. Undertaker's best in-ring years, though, didn't come until later in his career. So I might go for Undertaker. I think I might go 2000. Man. It's tough. 2008, maybe? Maybe 2008. And for Sting, best career year for Sting. Well, you know, he had those great matches with Vader back in the early 90s, but, you know, Crow Sting, man, that's when he was at his peak, even though they fucked it up at Starrcade, that whole build-up, the NWO angle. I mean, he didn't wrestle very often, though, so it's hard for me to answer this question. You know, how do I say that Sting's best career year was 1997 when he didn't wrestle? One match he had the entire year? I don't think I can in good conscience say that. I'm going to go for Sting 1992. Hey, think about that. I'm sitting here telling you 1992 was his best career year. And Sting is still wrestling in 2023. Ty Arts, what are your top three horror films of all time? Halloween is one. Shit. Specifically horror films, right? I don't know, man. I like Season of the Witch, which was Halloween 3, but I don't know if I would put that top three necessarily. I have to think on that. A bunch of options. I was a big Friday the 13th guy. I love the original Saw movie. I love the original Scream. It's probably some combination of those. Scream might be on there. I have to really think about that. But Halloween, you know what? The Thing is definitely on there. So I would go Halloween, The Thing. Yeah, and probably one of the others. It's a good question, though. Well, you know, he dropped $12 on me, so I may as well give him a shout out here. Dapoon 2002. That's what it says. Dapoon says, "Hey, Solo Monster, the Leicester defender here. Underwhelming show, to be honest. Agree with Solo being put over. Does this mean a John Cena redemption story at WrestleMania?" I'm not expecting John Cena to be at WrestleMania. I think we got him now, and that's probably going to be it for a while. Edwin Garcia, Priest's role in the company reminds me of Edge in 2006. Yeah, I could see that a little bit. I could see that. Jet with the $10. Do you think Roman could surpass Bruno's longest reign? No. Says, "I don't think Cody is winning next year, and Roman will surpass Hogan. So it is at least it is not plausible. It is not plausible. Bruno's longest run was 8 years. 8 years. Let that sink in for a second. 8 years of Roman Reigns and the bloodline on top as the champion? Not going to happen. Jazz says Solomonster loves Dapoon. Well, I do tonight. I mean, maybe $12. What's not to like? Ty Arts, middle brother Sam and I enjoyed the main event tonight. Take it easy. Sincerely, Guru TFJ of Ty Arts. Shout out to Ty Arts. Thank you for the support tonight. I appreciate that. Dan McDaniels, Dan Noodles. What a great name. With the $4.99, it says, "Who's next for Seth and the world title?" I don't know. If Will Ospreay had his choice, it would be him. I think Drew is still on the hunt. I still this Drew thing is not over yet, so I would still say Drew McIntyre. Slim Yoshi with the 10. "Hope you've been doing well. Don't know about you, but I believe WWE has a chance to make something very compelling with Io, Kyrie, and Damage Control. What do you think?" Yeah, I mean, they have that potential. Are they going to do it is a different question, but yeah, the potential is there for it. Remind me, when we saw Kyrie and Io on that one episode of Lucha Underground against Penta, those of you who watched Lucha Underground many years ago, they did an entire match, like a gauntlet, and it was Penta, Pentagon Dark against Kyrie was, and they had different names, but I'm pretty sure Io was one, Kyrie was the other. Who was the third one? Who was the third Japanese talent in that match? Because I wonder if maybe it's her. If she's going to be on her way to WWE. I can't remember who it was, though. Giandre King Cannon, "I shared your tweet about AEW not being dead in a wrestling group that I am in. I told them you are the best in the game. You have a few new followers." Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, there were a bunch of people who started following me after I posted what I thought was just common sense yesterday. It's amazing how shocking common sense could be sometimes in a sea of content creators that are not always full of common sense. The Black Lotus, yes, but who was she, though? Oh, was it Mayu? Okay, it was Mayu. All right, well, then she's not coming in. She's not coming into WWE. It was Mayu Iwatani? Okay. Never mind. She's not coming in. I want to go spreading rumors now. Solomonster says that Mayu Iwatani is coming to WWE. Holiday 197 with the $12 super chat. "I think John Cena will have his last match at WrestleMania 40. He could face Gunther for the Intercontinental title. It would build a great storyline on whether or not he can break the losing streak and win the one title that eluded him. Only to lose." I understand the story you're talking about. I gotta be honest with you, I don't like the match. I don't like that match for Gunther at WrestleMania next year. Not a fan. Again, I don't know that John Cena is going to be at WrestleMania 40. I think that if this strike is resolved very soon, it's gonna be a backlog of so many projects and so many movies, and WWE got more out of him with this run than they probably expected. It might be asking a little much to expect him at WrestleMania. Jazz Jackrabbit, after 5 years, what's the most memorable WWE moment in Saudi? For me, it's either Titus World Slide or when the wrestlers were detained but Vince left. Well, yeah, I mean, if you're including, like, behind-the-scenes stuff, that would probably be it. The hostage situation when Carl Anderson, right, didn't he say he'll never do that again, and then he came back to WWE and he worked the Saudi Arabia show? But, you know, he's got, like, 16 kids he's got to support, so I don't blame the guy. He's going to do whatever is asked. All I know is that Seth Rollins and Edge had a fantastic Hell in a Cell match in Saudi Arabia. I think that was 2 years ago. I think it was Crown Jewel in 2021. DeAndre King Cannon with the $10 Super Chat. Who is better, Edge or Christian? I've been saying Christian for years. He has more standout years to me. 2009 with that ECW roster. 2011 and his return has been better than Edge's. What do you say? Again, it's a hard question to answer. You know, who is better, Edge or Christian? They both have elements that I really like. Edge is the more accomplished of the two. He's been featured more prominently as a headline attraction, headline WrestleMania. He's got more world titles. He's got more main events against top main event names in the business. So how are you judging this? Me, personally, I am thoroughly enjoying Christian's current run in AEW and enjoying his work more than whatever Copeland is doing right now. They both bring something different to the table, though. Put me on the spot, though. You want an answer out of me? I go with Christian. That's my pick. William L. Solomonster, could you make a top 10 Bret Hart matches playlist on your channel? Or can you recall two or three of your favorites? Also, suck it, Honky Tonk Man. Thanks for being with us today. Didn't I do a Bret Hart list once? Have I really not done a Bret Hart? Of all the lists that I've done, have I really not done a Bret Hart top matches list? I'm almost positive I did. Can I give you two or three? Of course, I can give you three or four or five or six. Owen, WrestleMania 10, cage match, SummerSlam 94, Bret versus Owen. I quit with Austin. I'm sorry, submission match with Austin, WrestleMania 13. King of the Ring 93 against Mr. Perfect. SummerSlam 92 against British Bulldog. There you go. That'll get you started. Enjoy. Have fun. Mr. X, favorite Batman film. I actually like the 97 one. The Dark Knight is the greatest Batman film ever made. That's what it is. Number two is the original Batman with Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson. That's number two. Brandon Walker, now that Vince is supposedly gone, do you think the long-term plan is still to turn Roman face again? Roman Reigns is going to be a huge baby face at some point. Of course, everybody is going to turn at some point. Once Roman loses and the bloodline thing is over and Roman probably takes some time off and comes back, he'll be a baby face. That's going to happen with or without Vince McMahon. And Fire Panda, look at that. Fire Panda is working, but still she drops by to drop off a $5 super chat, which is very kind of Fire Panda. So thank you for the support. Very much appreciated. Well, we are closing in on 600 likes. So you guys smashed it, and I'm sure you guys will keep working that number up here after I'm long out of here. Hey, Renauts is coming in with a 420, an Undertaker 420. Super chat. Thank you, Renauts. That should be popping up here any second. And with that being said, let's go ahead and be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, speaking of Roman, it is now time to be the booker.
Look who it is. Roman Reigns, still your undisputed Universal Heavyweight Champion. Boy, that's a mouthful, isn't it? Let's just call him the WWE Champion, like LA Knight did on SmackDown last night. How about that? All right, you're getting a rare Saturday, be the booker. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you savor it, because it ain't going to happen again for a while. We kick things off here with Murder Grandpa, Minoru Suzuki. There's The Undertaker. There's the energy. I wonder if Suzuki partakes in the 420. What do you think? Follow him on social media. He seems like a fun guy. Minoru Suzuki, one-on-one with Adam Cole. There you go. Poor Adam Cole, sidelined now with that broken ankle. Hopefully he's doing well. He has been snake-bitten. It's like Bryan Danielson has been snake-bitten. John Moxley has been snake-bitten. And, boy, you know, AEW has a lot of injuries. I'm just going to say, Bryan Danielson, John Moxley, Adam Cole. What the fuck is going on in that company? On the women's side, we have Sky Blue. Oh, and the chat goes wild, I'm sure, right? Sky Blue. One-on-one. Well, that was good. Sky Blue and Nia Jax. Could not hit that button fast enough. What a horrendous match that would be, though. And let's do some tag team Be the Booker before we get on out of here. We kick things off here with the Ninja Turtle. Oh, no, I'm sorry, not the Ninja Turtles. I stand corrected. It is the Toxic Turtles. Yes, that was a real thing. That is a WWE ring. The Toxic Turtles. You'll notice I'm not hitting the buzzer yet, even though I hit the buzzer as soon as I saw Nia Jax. I'm not hitting the buzzer yet for the Toxic Turtles. I want to see who they are getting into the ring with. Hulk Hogan and Edge against the Toxic Turtles. If that doesn't bring people out to the building, then I don't know what does. You mean to tell me if I put Hulk Hogan and Edge on the marquee against two Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle looking guys, people won't be like, oh, I gotta see this shit, right? I'm buying a ticket. I'm putting that on my show. There you go. That is Be the Booker. That's right. The genius of it, they cannot be pinned because of their shells. Their shoulders are not on the mat. But the problem is when they're on their shell, they can't do anything. So the other guy has to come in and roll them over. See, but it's brilliant, though. It's a brilliant plan. Did I see the ooze in New York City? Have you been to New York City? You don't have to go very far to find ooze. All right, well, that is your crown jewel review, right? Have we gone through all your super chat? We got one more coming in. You're not going to keep me all night. I got to go have dinner. Juan Ocampo, though, is coming in with a $4.99. Juan says, hey, everybody, I am not enjoying my day from being hungover. Celebrated my birthday yesterday. Thanks for everything, you punk-hating AEW water pail shill. Okay, so I'm carrying the AEW water today. I forget sometimes. One day it's WWE, the other day it's AEW. It's hard to keep track of these things sometimes, you know? Juan, though, you gotta drink water, man. That's an amateur move. You go out for your birthday. You got to imagine people are going to be buying you drinks. You got to alternate with water. That's the key. Well, lesson learned for poor Juan. Anyway, Devin from NJ has been a channel member for 30 months. Will Salamaster be sounding off when he is in his 90s? You're assuming that Salamaster is going to be breathing when he's in his 90s. The answer is probably not. So no. But as long as I am here, yes, I do plan to sound off. You'll have to just put up with me. All right, tomorrow is episode 833 of the Sound Off. I don't know when it's going to be up. I'm still way behind on gathering all the news. I'm going to be going through that and your questions. And so at some point tomorrow, there will be a podcast. Don't ask me when, but keep an eye out. Make sure you're subbed on the appropriate channels and check out Sound Off 833. And always leave comments on Spotify as well, which now has comments open that you can leave for each individual episode. This audio will be going up as well, probably tomorrow night on the channel as well. Not YouTube, the audio channel. So be well, stay safe. Thanks for hanging out with me here on a Saturday afternoon. You guys are awesome, and we will do it all over again very soon, right here on YouTube. Until then, take care, guys. Oh, we got to come back here. We got a late super chat coming in. Late super chat. Am I coming back for Collision? No. Is that a real question? Oh, it is a real question. No, I'm not. No. I'm not coming back for Collision. But Fawaz is coming in with a super chat. I mentioned earlier, Fawaz, huge fan of the Sound Off, always representing us over in Saudi Arabia, and did not get his sign in. And so Fawaz has a super chat here. It says, oh man, I'm so sorry. I'm so angry that they did not let the sign in. I'm sorry. That's why I don't like Riyadh shows, but I came because of Cena and to support you. But in Jeddah, everything is perfect. I'm sorry again, but you don't have to apologize. Not your fault. He's been teasing it for several weeks, so I know he was putting something together. But it's not your fault, man. I appreciate just the thought, man. Just the thought and all the effort that you put into those signs. And I don't know where the next Saudi show is going to be, if it'll be in Jeddah. I imagine usually it goes back and forth, I think, right? So, but look, it's all good. And we'll keep an eye out the next time. That's all. If it was a Riyadh thing, then the next time they're in Jeddah, I guess we won't have that problem. But Fawaz, you got nothing to worry about, brother. I hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you, as always, for the love. All right, I'll see you guys next time. Take it easy.